Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, my brothers and my sisters, and welcome once again to the PRF Table. This is your host, Dr. Nate Dunlap, and we are excited because we have a guest with us tonight that is going to help us along. If you've been with us since the beginning of the month, you know that we have been talking from the theme of insurance or God's assurance. This is our theme for October 2017 here on the PRF Table, and we are talking from a subtopic, if you will, of destroying the spirit of poverty. And if you've been with us, you know that we have Vera Moody of the Moody Insurance Group up in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And then last week we had Brother Nelson Baldwin of Alpharetta, Georgia. And he just brought it. He came with us talking about the mind and how individuals' minds have to be transformed regarding what we're talking about. And tonight we have a brother that's very near and dear to my heart, Saeed Abdul Kadir. He is an owner of an insurance agency up in Willingboro, New Jersey. And I saw something earlier today, Saeed, that was the official opening of your doors and you walked people through. I was proud to see that. I couldn't do too much while I was driving, so I had to, you know, put it down between stoplights. But thank you, my brother, for accepting this invitation to be on the PRF Table once again. You've been here before, and so I just wanted to give you an opportunity to tell the people a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your experience.
Well, as always, I have to first give all thanks and praise to God. He has been truly, truly merciful to me. I mean, I cannot even fathom the fact that I am where I am in such a short period of time. It seems like a short period of time, but I guess it's really been my entire life building up to this point. But and always, it's a pleasure to talk to you. We've had many, many conversations about, oh my God, we can even list all the various topics we've talked about. And we share a passion, and that is to see our communities, our people rising above the stereotypical, the everyday, and the cycle of ineptitude that many of us find ourselves into. So it's always a lovely thing to have these conversations, and we pray and we pray that God will bless our actions, our intentions, and our focus so that it does reach those who He intends it to reach. And with that, you know, briefly, you know me. I'm an educator by heart. I've been teaching and developing programs to see people succeed. Now, believe it or not, it's been over 17 years. And you know, this is just one more venture down that road. And that is to try to really help people reach a point of self-awareness, most importantly. But I have a statement. I think I've said this on the show before, but equal opportunity is only truly equal when everyone has equal resources. And we chase that idea without necessarily putting the things in place that will allow for us to truly reach our potential. And most of it has to do with just being uneducated about finances, uneducated about looking at where we need to do while we're things, not where, but the things we need to do when we're young, not waiting till we're in our 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Right.
The things we need to do about education in our communities, making sure that we are, you know, we don't just say we believe in education, but we promote education in our communities. And I think that in and of itself is probably one of our biggest hang-ups. You know, I was having a conversation with some students Monday night, and we were at Deliverance Church over in North Philadelphia. They have a really nice, they've partnered with different colleges so that they can host college credits on their, in the actual church and in the on their grounds. So I teach there throughout the year. And so we were having a conversation, and one of the students asked, you know, why is it so hard? Why do we have so much trouble with math? And I'm like, well, it's because we don't value math the same way we need to and understand its importance. And they were like, well, what do you mean? I said, well, how often do we have conversations around the table with our children and with our young people about the importance of math? And they're like, well, you know, why would we? I'm saying, just think about money. Think about finances. Math is at the core of all money and finances. You balance your checkbook. You balance your, you know, you pay your bills. You have to see how much you're bringing in and how much you're going out. That's adding and subtracting. You know, that's positive and negative numbers. And I said, if you don't have those simple conversations with your younger people and within the family unit, we don't recognize how important math is across the board, starting with something as simple as our finances. So I'm not sure if I answered your question, but it took me down that path of just recognizing how important having education and understanding how important finances are to our well-being.
Yeah, and you know how we do it here on the PR table. We go down the path that we're led. We don't go down rabbit holes, but we go down the path that God leads us. And what you just it goes to what would have been my second question or my first question, which was, what's your thoughts on how to destroy this spirit of poverty? And as I mentioned earlier, what I put out there was, it's destroying the spirit of poverty. And I put emphasis on our flyer for last week and this week on the ING, because a lot of times people think that they have arrived when they get to certain places of influence, certain places within their job, within church, within religion. And yet and still, from what we continue to see, continues to let us know that there is a spirit of poverty that has not been broken. And it's a continual thing, because if one is not careful, that same thing that any of us think that we have overcome can come back, because they're spirits. Spirits do not like to just stay gone. They like to keep coming back. And so from a spiritual perspective, I'm very clear on how demons work in the spiritual realm, and I'm not saying I'm an expert in it, but I know that anything that flees us that is not of God, you best believe that at some point in time, I'm not going to say that it will come back, but there is always going to be a desire, because if we break the spirit of poverty, Saeed, you got to know that folk are not going to be happy about that, and those spirits that I'm speaking about, they're going to come back, not as this old boogeyman spiritual type of thing, not with a pitchfork and horns. It's going to come back through people, because that's how we operate in this world, by people. And so I appreciate what you said about Deliverance Church, and maybe one day I'll get a chance to witness when I come home. But what are some other thoughts, something that we can be a little more specific on, in this realm of education, promoting it and making sure that people understand that what you do for a living as a financial services person or professional?
I think that it's interesting, because I never like to speak from just a point of opinion, because, you know, but I like to give people different facts and things that they can walk away with and chew on. And so here's something, and it's funny, because Ebony magazine, or actually Ebony Online, wrote an article that I read recently, and it was something I thought of, and I looked it up, and I came back to it right now. Here's a recent study by Nielsen Company, and I think we've all known this and heard this at different times. African Americans in general will have over $1.1 trillion in buying power and up to $1.3 trillion in this year alone. That's $1 trillion of buying power. Yet you just adequately talked about this spirit of poverty. And it starts with because we are very financially illiterate. We're illiterate. You don't understand the power of not just that buying power, but just how money works. How money works. How it works to your benefit and how it can work to your detriment. You know, I got to take a sidebar for 1 second. You know, I have been truly, I thank God. I truly thank God. I have been blessed with so many things in life. But being blessed with so many things in life and not having an understanding of finances can also be a curse. Because what happens is like you said, things come around. You know, we can call it whatever you want to call it. We can call it Satan. We can call it the devils. We can call it spirits. We can just call it how, you know, just life in general. You know, we'll leave it to the individual to put a name on it. But
right.
In 2015, over the years, I've started understanding the importance of being financially literate and also financially independent. However, as I thought I was growing that knowledge, two major things happened to me almost immediately, and it was a very interesting period of time for me. 2015. I was laid off from my major job. When I say major, I lost 60% of my income. 60% of my income. And it's right after I finished buying a house. I mean, literally, I bought the house in May and was laid off in August. At the end of 2015. Luckily, I had different money invested in certain things, and I was able to pull money out. But like many people, you know what I pulled from? My retirement money, because that was the money that was going to float me while I'm trying to find this new job and I'm sending out resumes. And I'm like, how can someone with 4 degrees and all this information cannot get hired? And then not too long after that, I'm in a major car accident. Literally 3 surgeries, couldn't walk, couldn't do anything. And ironically, it was at the lowest part of my – I'm like, how can I have gotten to where I am, know as much as I know and do as much as I do and be in this particular thing? And I realized because it's not about how much money you can accumulate. It's about how much you want. You give credit where credit is due. You make sure your finances are coming in a way that is pleasing to him who has given it to you. And you stay away from the, as I hate to say, putting all your eggs in one basket, relying on someone else to feed your family. So I was able, I said, I'm not doing it again. I'm never going to do it again. I started looking at, okay, how do I invest in myself? First and foremost, by becoming financially literate, understanding truly how money works. What does investment mean? How familiar are the people with their debt-to-income ratios? How to work, have their credit work for them? This doesn't mean going out and blowing and running up credit debt, but how to make credit work for you. Understanding the importance of multiple streams of income, not relying on just that job because the job can go away. What kinds of insurance do you have, life insurance and a retirement plan? I know many of us, especially in the African-American community, we shy away from life insurance. But believe it or not, it's one of the safest investments a person can have without worrying about taxes and taxation. And then thinking beyond the moment. You know, we chase the dollar in the moment so much that we forget about living. And understanding living, when I say this, is to understand that you have to be comfortable. If you are working 60, 70, 80, 90 hours a day just to pay the bills, at some point you are setting yourself up for either a health failure, a mental failure, family failure, or all of the above. So we have to find that balance. So if there was four things I would say people need to take and wrap their head around is become financially literate. Sit down with someone you trust and you want to sit down and have them help you understand where your budget is, where your money's going, how you can realign what you have. Because here's a little note that most people don't think about. People think that they have to get all this money to get out of debt or all this money to get, you know, financially situated. You really don't. You just really need to just reorganize what you're working with. Simply reorganizing what you're working with can get most people further along that financial path than they would even know. And again, diversifying their income. You know, it's find what you're good at and do something. I like to use, hey, if you know how to braid hair, go to work and braid hair on the weekends. So
right.
Some extra money that can come into the house, and you can use it. Turn it into a business. Work for yourself at some point. Because financial independence, it also comes from the independence of being able to do for self. And then understanding the how investments work. Understand where and how you can put your money into something that is really simple, that will help you today. And the last thing, which is really special to me, is think about your family's future. Think about your family's future. Think about your family's future. I'll say it again. Think about your family's future. You know, here's one of the things that it's really. I don't know if I can give you a visual of this, but I had a conversation with. I can't even remember the gentleman's name, but he's also a person who's like of like minds with us. And he said, and here's what he said. He said, if you look at every ethnic group across the board, he said, we're not talking about race, meaning white and black. We're just talking about ethnic groups. So he was saying, if you look at each ethnic group, Asians, Europeans, and when he said Europeans, he was like Italians, you know, he went down like the various ethnic groups within those, the things. And he was like, every one of those groups, when they come over here to the United States or when they start a business or when they do whatever it is that they're doing, they start at the ground and they build up. And they leave their children where at the level for which they built up to. And then their children start from that level and build upon that, and so forth and so on. He was like, only African Americans and Hispanics are the only ethnic group that will start from the ground up and build up, and but then expect their children to start from the ground and build up. They don't leave a platform for their children to build upon. And I was amazed that he was like, he said, in your travels, talk to people. And I can't tell you how many families or people I've talked to. And I said, so, you know, what about insurance? And what are you going to do for this? And what are you going to do? Oh, I'm not leaving nothing for my kids. Oh, if I had to work for it, they got to work for it. I'm like, what sense does that make? That means that your family stays in poverty for the rest of eternity if everyone in your family thinks that way.
Right. Thinking about the family's future. That's the essence of where we are this whole month. We've been talking about preparing. We had last month our series was Prepare for Poverty or Prosperity, or Prosperity or Poverty. And one of the things that everybody knows who's been following us is that normally this is what we're talking about right now. We've extended it outward, where we've just dealt with it in a different way. But every year, you may remember this, every year in November, we're always trying to be that platform, that organization, that ministry, whatever you want to call us, that is being proactive before Black Friday. And so for whatever reason, God has had us in this place of preparing for prosperity or poverty, dealing with insurance or God's insurance. And we've been doing this for the last couple of months. And so that kind of lets me know as a leader that there's certain things that are coming and God wants his people to be prepared. Now, everybody's not going to listen to the PRF table. But those who listen to the PRF table have the ability to share that information with somebody else who doesn't listen to the PRF table. And I was speaking at an event last Saturday in a place called Ozark, Alabama. And we were talking about poverty. I was talking about poverty. And one of the things about it was the state of Alabama, I had to look up and do a little homework first, is the sixth poorest state in the country. The sixth. And so I said, y'all should be happy because last year y'all was number four. So we went up two states. But really, right. You really shouldn't be happy about that. But at least, you can see a little bit of progress. But here's the deal. Unless you know how you went from number four to number six.
Right.
Or number unless you know that, you are bound. And I didn't go into this because I told him I was going to do it in 8 minutes, but it took me 15. So, and you know, that's great for me, right? I surprised right. myself. But if you don't know how to come out of poverty, if you don't know what has been done to change the landscape of the particular situation that we're in or that people are in, I just believe that they're destined to go back to that same place because maybe there were some tricks that was done. You said it at the beginning of the show. You said equal opportunity is not equal opportunity if people don't have equal resources. And so for those individuals
Correct.
Who don't have the equal resources, I grew up in the projects. Right. My resources wasn't equal to somebody like Saeed who grew up, with a mom and dad in the house. I'm a single, I grew up in a single parent household if that was my case. Well, things
right.
are not equal. And so I don't see
right.
things the same way. And so it was just amazing that how we put education and poverty in the same conversation. And I said, the reality is in the state of Alabama, there are so many manufacturing jobs, so many type of mills, chicken plants, all of those very productive manual labor type jobs. And you know what hit me as I was leaving? Because I said, you know what? The powers that be are comfortable with those individuals working on those assembly lines. They're comfortable with those individuals working at the chicken plant because it's bringing revenue to the state. It's bringing revenue to the city. But what people are not getting is although they may be making $15, $20 an hour, which is not bad money in Alabama, but I found out that they got at one place, I'm not even going to give them credit by mentioning their name, but there is a job at a chicken plant. And I'm sure it's like this in other chicken plants as well around the state, but they have a shift that people work on, and it's a 7-day shift. Now think about this. If you work in a 7-day shift, that means you ain't never working, getting a day off.
Mm-hmm.
You work 7 days a week. So if you work 7 days a week, then you're not taking any rest for yourself. And what you mentioned earlier about the health part, right? If all you're doing is working, eventually that deals with the health. We have a show called Your Health is Your Wealth. Kimberly has a show every first and third Friday talking about these type of things. And then the other part is you can never do what you said, which will help get people out of poverty. You can't follow your dream.
Right.
Because they're not working 7 days a week, 4 hours a day. We're talking about 8, 9, 10 hours a day, sometimes 12. So
I
these folks are
because...
burnt, just broke down. And And I know that unless they do something different, they'll stay in that place of poverty, because for them, they don't have time to do what we're talking about, Saeed. They don't have time to become financially literate. They don't have time to find out how to seek somebody out and sit in some conferences or listen to the PRF table, or they don't even have that time because they are broke down and worn down from just trying to survive.
Listen, I'm gonna say this, and God knows that I don't mean this as it comes out, but I was gonna temper my words, but I don't even know how to do it without doing injustice. I agree, and there's nothing I can say, with all earnestness, to combat that, because the reality of it is we live in a society where capitalism is based upon human capital. Human capital is what drives our country. It has always been that case. I can give you a history lesson in it. It was one of the reasons that, I mean, if you want to just as a very quick sidebar, but it's one of the reasons why African Americans were prime for slavery, because of structure. Number one is we can talk about all the physical characteristics all we want. You know, they're strong, they can run fast, they can carry stuff, all that stuff. But the main reason why they were good for that is because of our pigmentation. We stand out. So we couldn't go and, you know, after a while walk off the plantation and go and intermingle with the crowd and not be a slave no more. Our skin tone said, we know you are a slave because you are black, period. That's it. That's the end of it. And that mentality has permeated throughout our indirectly. What you think about this? What did your parents tell you? Boy, get out there and get this job and work so you can take care of your family. How many of them say, go start a business?
Mm-mm.
Think about that, folks. How many of you've heard from your aunts, your uncles, your grandfathers, your mothers? And I'm not saying everyone, because there's always going to be someone that my mom said it or my dad said it. I'm not talking about the people on the realms. I'm talking about the masses. How many of them are out there telling you, go and start a business, work, be independent? No, what we learn is get a job, graduate high school, and then we celebrate that like it's some major event and get a job. Now we're talking about go to college, but we're not educated enough about how colleges work that lots of times we get in there and we get weighed down by more debt.
Right.
I can remember when I first started my first business, I can remember clearly hearing almost verbatim, every person that I talked to was said the same thing. I cannot believe you're going to leave this good job with benefits to go start a business that you don't know anything about.
Right.
Because the idea is you stay. The general consensus is it's better to, you know, have that guaranteed job. And I'm not saying this is work for everyone, because not everyone's supposed to be business owners. Not everyone's going to be financially independent. Not everyone's going to not work in a chicken factory. There are going to be some who are going to have to work in a chicken factory. However, we do not have to continue the cycle of community poverty because so many of us are afraid to take the step toward financial independence at the expense of not working that 17th hour of the day, not working those 82 hours, because making that $20 an hour and I'm getting these 2 hours overtime looks good. Fine, great, do it. I'm not going to tell anyone to stop their hustle, but my thing is, what are you doing with those 2 hours overtime?
Right.
Where are you putting that money? Where are you securing your financial future? Because you say, you know what, I'm going to work these 80 hours, but I'm going to take that extra two hours of overtime, and I'm going to invest it in my son or daughter's future. I'm going to make sure that my retirement plan is going to be adequate so that when I reach retirement, I don't have to I don't have to go and be working till I'm 70 and 75 because my retirement's not enough. I'm not relying on Social Security, which if anyone knows, anyone under the age of 50 might not even be getting all of their Social Security.
Right.
You know, so that's the point I'm saying. I'm not saying anyone shouldn't do that, but at the same point in time, at some point, you got to realize, like you said, the lady says, your health is your wealth. You're doing these 80, 90 hours a week. At some point, your health will then what happens? Then what happens?
Mm-hmm. Spend more money.
Yeah, you're spending
more money.
So now you got health, issues that you're trying to deal with. Now you can't work those 80 hours and 120 hours. And now not only your family's struggling because they've gotten used to you doing those 80 and 90 hour days and bringing home that 80 and 90 hour paycheck, but now not only are you not bringing home the paycheck, your health is out of whack, and now you got health bills, and now everyone in the family's struggling because now we're trying to figure out how to keep you alive and pay the bills.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
One of the things that I really feel we need to sound the alarm on is it goes back to this trillions of dollars that we're spending as people in this country. And I need our listeners to hear from somebody in that space, because you know sometimes when you daddy, you know, the kids get tired of hearing daddy mouth, right? So sometimes you got to bring mama in there or say, you know what, let me call my Uncle Bud, you know, they like, or grandpa, you know, they like that other person, cuz grandpa give them little nuggets. So grandpa give them dollars when daddy like, no, you need to work for it. So here's their moment to hear from somebody else. We're approaching, and we're fastly approaching Black Friday. The way Black Friday used to be, and let me preface this, I'm not against capitalism. I promise you I'm not against capitalism. I understand, because it makes the world go round. Got it. We can put a pin in there. We're good, right?
Yep.
But Black Friday is coming around. And Black Friday, years ago, used to be where you had to get up at 2-3 in the morning, or maybe not even go to sleep after Thanksgiving, to stand in long lines waiting on 20% of some product that you think you're going to be one of the ones that having to get 20% of the product. And then they offer other things because they know everybody's not going to get that one item that everybody's looking for. So they got other things on sale to help get your money because you're in there. And it's a very good tactic. It's a very good business model. Don't agree with it, but that's what it is. The other, now take it one step further. Now we're in a day and time when that's not necessarily what people have to do anymore, because they have Black Friday sales. These Thanksgiving Day sales start on the Monday before Thanksgiving. And then they're called online sales. And so that industry, that space has become very wise at realizing, you know what, why Dunlap is going to sit there and stand in that line from 2 o'clock until we open up at six, there's a whole bunch of Dunlaps that's not going to get about the bed. So how can we get that Dunlap, right? How can we get that Saeed? And so I'm just so in a place right now of knowing that if we don't try maybe some different tactics, just like the world has done, and I call it the world, business world or the world, if we don't do, those of us who are believers in God, call ourselves godly men and women, are doing things that are above board, not trying to hurt anybody, trying to help people, trying to educate. If we don't change our tactics, I mean, we come on the radio every Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, every week. listenership could be like Michael Baisden, but I'm not talking about stuff that's just fun for folk all the time. And we're going to call it like it is, like you said, like you had to put that, try to tailor your comment a few moments ago. Yeah, you ain't got to tailor it on the PRF table because ain't nobody going to shut me down. I pay for this. You know what I'm saying? Or the ministry pays for it. But we have to try something different when it comes to trying to educate, especially when you're dealing with different demographics all the time. So I said all that to throw this question out as we get ready to wind it down. If there was one demographic out there that could change the face of what we're talking about, so we're not talking about this 5 years from now, this same thing that we've been talking about for years on the PRF table, years for you and I having these conversations. If it was one demographic, what demographic would that be? Male, female, black, white, you know, married, single, divorced women. What would it be? And I'm asking for your opinion.
In my opinion, all, you know, and this is probably the one group that everyone's going to either say yes or they're going to say no. If, in my opinion, if we were going to really try to change the outcome of what this is going to be, my focus would be, first and foremost, I would get into the high schools and get in front of as many young African-American males as I possibly could. That's where I would start. I would sit down with them, and I would talk about money, not about all the other stuff that everyone wants to talk about, stay away from this and stay away from that and so forth and so on. I would talk about money. I would sit down and talk to them about how important math is to them going out here and becoming the next whatever. And have them understand how it works in real time, what it really looks like. That's where I would start. Now, if I had to spread it out from there, I would go and get into these colleges and start talking to these young African-American men and women and Latinos, because they're right next to us, and say, okay, hey, listen, you need to start really thinking about what you can do with investing your time so that when you get out of college, you already have a financial direction to go in. You're not waiting for someone to give you a job based upon this degree. Give me, take $20. That's all you need, $20 a week. You guys waste $20 a week on going out, smoking weed, drinking, doing whatever you do, buying new iPhones, spending it on online games, you know, getting your nails done. Just don't get it done this week. Just give me $20 and I can show you how you can turn that into $1,000 within a year. Turn that into $100,000 within 10 years. I can show you that by the time you're my age at 50, you can start taking money out and still watch your money grow to over $1 million.
You know what? That's it. See, I'm trying, not me personally, but we, the PRF in general, are really trying to get people to understand that. Matter of fact, I tell you something that you said to me, and that's what laid. That's why I speak in the terms I'm speaking of right now. Matter of fact, I said this last week somewhere I was speaking. You can't heat an ocean.
Sure enough.
So for so long, I mean, we were doing that early on. You know, you said this to me way back when I was working on my D-Men. And I'm so glad I listened. I'm so glad I'm listening, because I probably would still be trying to work on it. Wouldn't be finished right now. We have to deal with things in specifics. And to my religious brothers and sisters, my clergy brothers and sisters, we can't just think that we can get in front of, you know, stand in a pulpit or teaching the Bible studies or Sunday schools and just talk about this in a terminology that fits everybody. there's different needs for different groups and demographics of people. And so as our guest, I wanted you to respond to that. And I'm going to pose that question to everybody else who is a guest on this particular topic for the rest of the month. Because if you're not moving towards that demographic, whatever that demographic is, then you're trying to heat an ocean. And we'll never destroy the spirit of poverty. It'll never be destroyed because it's too big for us. Poverty is poverty is not a mindset. Kimberly Scott, I think, said this, and I'm going to butcher it a little bit because I don't have it in front of me. But she said that poverty is not a mindset. It is a complex, and I'm adding complex web of circumstances that hard and obstacles that hardworking people try to overcome every single day. When she said that, I read that, I said, you know what? And when I said that out loud, everybody took to that because they were thinking, because what it did, it sparked something in their mind about the different obstacles. And so everybody had different obstacles that they were, that probably popped into their mind. But if you don't do anything about those obstacles, like have conversations, because everybody's thinking about their own personal situations. I don't know if you remember several years ago, I did a research study in the community, thought that money was the number one issue that was plaguing the community, like the lack thereof.
Right, but education yes, was. I do remember.
Remember that? Education
yes.
was the number one thing that that collectively the group of participants said, this is my concern. And so as I went to everybody after and said, listen, what is it going to take? Everybody, now I'm going to call it out, all of the religious leaders, all of them, they were so fixed in their religion that they couldn't see the spirit of poverty. Because everybody wanted to come to the table and try to convince everybody else that the reason behind it is because of something dealing with their religion. It was unbelievable to me. Still have that same mindset. Education still hasn't been increased in the community. So what that says to me is they just talked about it, but they got to get over themselves. Because what's important to each one of us, we got to find the common ground. Because if we don't find a common ground, how are we ever going to work together? There's always going to be people that want to lead. There's always going to be people who have the ability to lead. There's always going to be people that want to follow. But we got to get on some type of accord, not just in the community that I live in, but I'm speaking of a lot of the other communities that participate in the PRF table or our learning sessions, our legacy conference, and all the other things that we do. So,
well, I mean, I think that, and you know, we share a universal belief in God, you know, but we practice in, you know, from different avenues, you know. I'm a Muslim. I think everyone by now should know that. If they've not known me, or at least know or look at my name, they would kind of probably figure that part out. But I'm a Muslim, you know. But I am also an African American. I'm also a person who you and I have conversations all the time. I teach at Deliverance Church. It's a Christian church, you know. I believe that universally, you know, there is one God, and we will find our way to or away from him in our own way. However, I will say this, the communities at large, regardless if you're walking into a masjid, if you're walking into a church, if you're walking into a synagogue, you're sitting in some spiritual meeting in someone's home, collectively we are all struggling from that thing called poverty. Collectively, we're struggling for poverty. Yeah, we got the few outliers that are out there. Yeah, we got the few that makes it out of the community, but they're part of our collective poverty as well. I mean, let's call it what it is. Every time we leave the community because we get the ability to leave, we add to that poverty. I'm going to say, so like your person said, it is an entangled web. It's a web of individual hurdles, it's a web of community hurdles, and it's a web of as you just pointed out, not collectively thinking or finding a common ground for which we as a community can start working on poverty. I don't have the answer for every individual situation. I do know that there's three things that we do need to work on collectively, however we get there. Now, it could be you from preaching it, it can be me from teaching it, it could be individuals looking in their own proverbial and financial mirrors. But one of the first things, I'll repeat it, and I know we're getting running out of time, but I'll repeat it and say, financial literacy. Folks, please, 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 I don't care if you have $100 in the bank, $1,000 in the bank, $1,000,000 in the bank. If you don't have financial literacy, it goes away in the blink of an eye. Number two, we have to stop draining our communities of all of our good people. When we make it, we got to turn around and reach back. We can't just walk out and go and give our hard-earned tax dollars to the other man because we want to live in there. And I'm not saying you don't want to live in a good neighborhood. Go move to a good neighborhood, but be selective and say, you know what, do I have people of color around me that are going to benefit from my wealth? Meaning, my tax dollars are helping a school that has people of color going to those schools. If my tax dollars aren't helping them, then I am indirectly helping poverty stay in our communities. And that is a straight shout at everybody out there, all these people, every last one of them. I don't give a how much you donate to the community. If you're not living in the community, you're hurting the community. Every last one of you. I don't care who you are, how much money you make, if you're Oprah, Jay-Z, if you're whoever, Little Cecil, I don't care who you are. If you're not living in the neighborhood, you're hurting the neighborhood. And last but not least, we need to start talking to our youth. Stop being afraid to have the conversation with our youth about what it takes to be successful. And it's not just about going to college. It's not just about becoming the next basketball player. It's not just about how good they are in one thing or another. We have to start having the conversations about, you know what? What does it mean to save money? What does it mean to invest money? What does it mean to balance a checkbook? Just something simple like that. What does it mean to work and put some money aside and say, hey, you know what? I don't need to buy this right now because I really want this.
Yeah.
Those simple conversations could go a long way. They could go a long way. But if you're not sitting down and having that conversation with your son and daughter, where are they going to learn it from? I remember back in the day when we went to school, at least you learned home ec, so you knew how to cook, and you had shop. You knew how to go out. You knew how to cook. You knew how. As a matter of fact, heck, I even had sewing class. I had cooking class, sewing class, and I knew how to go and had a trade. They're not getting it in school.
Wow.
So who is teaching them? Who is teaching them those things? And if you, as the mom and dad, and I'm not saying that, I have my one of my birds in the room. I don't know if y'all can hear.
I hear.
But if your mom and dad, and you're working in the chicken factory, or if you're working at the hospital, or if you're working at wherever, and you're working 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 hours a day, not including commuting, and they're not getting shop at school, and they're not getting home ec at school, and they're not getting sewing in school, they're not getting how to balance their budget in school, they're not getting these real-life things, and you're not home to give it to them, where are they getting it from? Because they sure ain't going on social media to find it.
Nah, they learn it, and let me tell you where they learn it. They learn it like I learned it. They learned it like maybe you learned it. We learn from doing stupid stuff. We learn from having credit getting jacked up and then having to try to build it back up. But then as it builds back up, you don't get the same rates that you could have got or could have received.
Right.
If you didn't mess it up. Listen, I'm telling you, nine out of 10 people I talk to, I'm telling you, it's a high number. 9 out of 10 people that I talk to, and I'm talking about dealing with them, not just having conversations on the street. I'm talking about
I got you
professionally. It's credit issues.
It's
unbelievable. It is credit, and it's not just a black or white thing. I mean, it depends on, you know, the area that I'm going to. But I'm going to tell you something. Out of the Asians that I deal with, they don't have that problem. I ain't never, ever, and I'm talking about 16 years, had an Asian that had bad credit. I'm telling you what, I'm just telling you the truth. Never had an Asian that has had bad credit. Now, white folk, 20-30% of white folk have had credit issues. And professionally, this is not because I'm going after them. This is what comes to me. So you know, they don't know, you know, that, you know, it's not like I'm going to a black community and that's, you know, and I'm only dealing with black folk. No, I'm dealing with different communities around the country, and whoever is involved in that is who I deal with. Even today, I was sitting down with a young man today, and it was crazy because they had this young man has had a couple things on his credit, right? We're talking about several different things, you know, life things, but credit was one of them. And it was amazing that, you know, he forgot that he'd been to college. All he knew was that he was paying his student loans off. But he tried different things, like try to educate himself to get out of the debt. A lot of times folks want to educate themselves just to get out of a hole, right?
Right.
And so he tried to he had a couple of student loans. But it was just a bad part of his life. And he's paying them now. But we're talking about from several years ago. But the loan amounts are so small. And here's what he told me. The reason he got those student loans was not to pay for his school, was to pay bills.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a whole nother story. That's a whole nother story, a whole nother series, I guess, because a lot of people have utilized during times where economy was not good, people were being laid off and, you know, housing bubble and all that stuff. So a lot of people turned to the student loan, went back to school. They know they stopped their loans. So, and I'm telling you, it has so many people jacked up, Saeed. And so when you come to talk to them about thinking about their family future, the reality that we have to address, have to address it in the church. I can say from the church perspective, because that's my context. I won't say we got to. We're going to address it in our ministry. Y'all keep not talking about it over there, and they're going to keep coming to see me anyway. So it's just maybe a good idea if you do, if they do talk about it. But the reality is when we're trying to deal with folks, they don't want to hear what you and I are talking about. Because they're so far gone. It's not over, but they're so far in a hole. And if I tell people all the time, I tell pastors this all the time. I say, bruh, sis, if you really knew what I knew, you would never say no to PRF. Never. They would never say no to PRF if they knew what I knew. So what that tells me is that they also have some issues. See, if it was me, and God has to lead me here. But I really want to deal with pastors and religious leaders. I really want to deal with pastors and religious leaders.
That's I'm going to leave that for a whole nother show.
Yeah.
But I will say this. That I do agree with you that a lot of us are in a very bad place. A lot of us. And I'm like you. I teach at three different colleges, four different colleges in the Pennsylvania area. So I'm meeting all people from all different ages, walks of life, and different ethnic groups. And yes, you're right. There is a disparity between how many African Americans have credit challenges versus other ethnic groups. I will agree with you. And a lot of it is because of what I just said, lack of education early on. So as much as I would love, I've given up on us. That's not the point I'm about to make. But I've stopped trying to boil the ocean. I stopped trying to say. So when I sit down with someone who is, say, mid to late 30s, 40s, or even 50s, I just go from the door and say, listen, where you want to be and where you're starting is going to be extremely expensive. So I'm not going to try to sell you on the idea of you're going to be financially secure by the time you reach whatever. I'm not going to sell you on the idea that I'm going to fix all your credit woes or doing all the things. But what I can do is I can help you fix your credit by giving you some very simple tips on how to navigate that credit hurdle. I can tell you what you need to do to kind of stabilize where you're going and get you to a place that if the best thing you can do is look for how can you help the next generation. However, where I really want my focus to be is on everybody who is young. That's really where I'm really starting to tailor my message. I'm trying to tailor my approach, my market. I'm going to market heavily. You're going to start seeing a lot of stuff focused at people who are young. Because here's what I find interesting, and this is this. I've sat down with, over the last, say, year and a half, I've sat down with, let's just say, 15 people under the age of 25 who want to do something about looking at retirement and investment and so forth. But I'm just using the number 15. It could be more, it could be less. But the point is I'm using 15.
Right.
Out of all of them, only 3 were African-American. Three. Now, it could have been 50 people I met with, but I can tell you how many African-Americans there were. 3. All right?
Wow.
3 that actually was under the age of 25 and recognized the importance of starting to invest in their future now. Out of all the other people, they were every other ethnic group, primarily Caucasians. There's a few Asians in there, but the reality of it, they understood that. And they understood that just putting a little bit away while they're young means that they don't have to worry about putting a lot away when they're older.
Right.
Where did you get that information? I ask the same question to them all the time. What made you come and sit down and talk to me? And every last one of them said, well, my parents said I really need to start putting some money away, or my grandfather said I need to do this, or someone. When I asked the 3 African-Americans why were they there, they were like, I heard my white friends talking about it. That means we're not having that conversation with our kids.
Hey, I'm going to be real facetious in my statement I'm about to make. Maybe part of that strategy that I just talked about may mean to educate more of the white people, and then we educate more of the white people, and then if they're going to listen to the white people, then maybe we can get the – I said it was going to be facetious. And no, but listen, you know what? It's amazing because as crass and as crazy as that just sounded, at the end of the day, it's about educating folk. And that's not going to be my strategy. I'm not going down that road. But if you think about it, the same way that I just said that is the same way that other folks use it in a reverse psychology way to get money out of folks. You know what? Yeah. Okay. So we're going to have to cut this one off because we're about to go somewhere else, and I don't think we got enough time to deal with. That's going to take us somewhere else, but something has been lost in our communities. And I say in our communities, talking specifically from the black community over the last 50 years. Some things have been lost. And so I just really believe that God wants us to reclaim some things that have been lost. And the only way that's going to happen is if we follow God, ask God for guidance and wisdom, and then put into practice those things which are not just spiritual but also practical, realizing that they validate in between both. You know, you're not just going to be all spiritual all the time. You're not going to be just dealing with all in the practical. It's back and forth all the time. So, Saeed, I thank you for lending us some of your time. I'm going to find a way to chop this episode up because I think people need to sometimes take things in bites. Small bites. The chocolate candy factories have realized, you know what, we can't sell. Everybody's not buying a whole candy bar, so we're going to put it into bites. and put them in a bag, and that way now you'd have brought three candy bars when you didn't own,
right.
when we couldn't even sell you one. So
right.
Let's continue the conversation. Let's continue the dialogue. Please give us your contact information. Let us know where your agency is, and we'll make sure that it also gets put on the website. But for those who don't go to the website or Facebook, let's give it to them here before we go.
Well, first, physically, I'm located in Burlington City, New Jersey. The physical address is 1130 East Route 130, and that is in Burlington, New Jersey, 08016. You can always call me, 609-694-2298. And you can find me if you search, if you don't necessarily go on, there is a Facebook page for me for those who are use social media, LinkedIn, Twitter. I have a social presence everywhere. But if you can't, you can always just go to farmers.com, F-A-R-M-E-R-S.com, and put in search for an agent and put in Burlington City, and you will see me pop up there. Please feel free to reach out to me. Email S-A-B-D-U-L, that's Sam, Alpha, Bravo, David, Uncle, Larry, at farmers, with an S, agent.com. So that's S-A-B-D-U-L, at farmersagent.com. Again, if you Google me, Saeed Abdul-Kabir, you will find me. So please, feel free. If you have questions, it doesn't even have to be about your own personal things or your finances. If you just have questions and want to follow up, I am always open to have a conversation with any and everyone. And I want to thank you, Nate, as I lovingly call you, Reverend Dunlap, for all of those others who want me to be more formal. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to the people. Thank you for inviting me out. May God continue to bless both our actions, our deeds, and our words, and may they be pleasing to him. And if we say anything or we do anything that is mispleasing, may he forgive us and recognize it is from our own inadequacies. And everything for which he does is good, and everything for which we do is only by his pure grace. So I thank you again for the opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you. Much blessings on your new endeavor, the office. I can't wait to come back home and see it. And prayerfully, it'll be sometime before the end of the year. I pray it's not too cold up there because, you know, I got used to being in the South a little bit. So, you know, I don't have all those wintery clothes. That's why I go out of the country to those sunny places during the holidays. So, but again, brother, listen, we love you. We thank you so much. I will be trying to incorporate some of the things that you mentioned, especially dealing with our young people. We have to find a way to get to our young people. And I'm just going to trust God that he's going to make that happen. Thanks for partnering with us over the years, just being one of the ones that we can send people to. So God is moving and doing some, he's putting some things in place up there back home. As you know, I've been away from home for a long period of time, and I've worked in several different communities, but for whatever reason, God is trying to send me back home for a purpose or a season, and I'm just trying to hear what it is, as everybody else on the team does, what God has called them to do with PRF. So until then, we'll see y'all tomorrow night on our regular scheduled night, October the 19th, 2017. At 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is your host, Dr. Nate Dunlap. On behalf of all of us here at the PRF table, God bless you. We'll talk to you soon. God bless.